Morning, everyone. Today's Daf and Ksuvos is Daf Ayin Ches. We're about to start the 8th parak. We have a little bit more to finish up the 7th parak, so that's obviously what we're going to do right now. Thank the Light Loop and Foundation for sponsorship of the Daf. Daf is Lelan Zeichen Nishmat Liba Gavela Bashmua. Let's first and foremost finish up. At the end of the 7th parak, we are discussing a little bit of Agadata and a little bit of Gemara medicine. We talked about neural surgery yesterday. I know that sounds a little bit strange, but the reason why the Gemara got into the discussion of neural surgery is because we talked about Mukashchen. Mukashchen, kind of blemish where it's hard for us to totally relate to what this is. Mukashchen Ra'asan, but there's a form of boils where the Mishnah says that if a husband is unfortunately affected by this, so the marriage is an intolerable marriage. It's no expectation of her to suffer that kind of marriage, and so therefore the Chachamim are going to go in and they're going to force a dissolvement of the marriage. They're going to force him to give her a get. That is what we learned yesterday. And as long as we were on the topic of Mukashchen, so the Gemara talked about there are 24 different types of Mukashchen, and the worst of the worst of Mukashchen is what's called Ra'asan. Ra'asan, the Gemara describes as being just a disaster. Somebody suffering from Ra'asan is really the worst case scenario of Mukashchen. And then the Gemara yesterday gave us a little bit of neural surgery in terms of removing it. There's seemingly, again, I'm not providing a real explanation, but this is what the Gemara seems to be indicating, is that there's some sort of parasite that's living on the membrane of the brain. And basically what happens is that you put him in a sterile environment and you you open up the skull and you remove the parasite. And that's what we saw yesterday in terms of how to fix the problem. Okay, Machriz Rabbi Yochanan. We are two lines down as the lines get really wide. It's about halfway down the Amud. An Ein Zayin Amud Beis. Machriz Rabbi Yochanan. He makes a declaration. He's Haru Mizvuvei Shabalei Ra'asan. You see flies swarming around people who are suffering from this Ra'asan. So be careful of those flies. In other words, flies carry the the bacteria, the virus, they're going to transmit it. And basically, Rav Yochanan is telling us there's something called the disease, which could be contagious, and it could be communicated through flies. Okay, I know it sounds like we're discussing something that's somewhat more contemporary, somewhat more modern. Okay, Rabbi Yochanan says it. Rabbi Zera lo yav yasev bezika. Rabbi Zera wouldn't stand in the wind that was being blown from somebody who was suffering from Ra'asan. Rabbi Eliezer lo ayel bo'alei. Rabbi Lazar wouldn't even go into his tent. Rabbi Ami Rabbi Vasi lo achli mi be'ei. De'ahim avawa. If there were eggs coming from a community of people suffering from Ra'asan, they wouldn't eat the eggs. In other words, it's contagious, highly contagious, highly transmittable, and so therefore these Amoraim were very careful. And that's all until we get to Rav Yeshua ben Levi. And now, from the rest of this stuff, we are going to be discussing Rav Yeshua ben Levi, and we start off with one interesting fact. Rav Yeshua ben Levi, michrech behu, v'asik b'tara. So Rav Yeshua ben Levi would go into the communities where people are suffering from Ra'asan, and despite the fact that we saw that the general consensus amongst the Amoraim is it's a highly contagious disease, and don't get close to it, and don't even eat the food from it, Rav Yeshua ben Levi would go and he would teach Torah to the Balei Ra'asan. Okay? And Amar, he said, in defense of his actions, Ayelas Oavim, V'yalas Chayin. Look, Kadosh Baruch Hu will provide for me divine protection. I'm going to get Chayin. I'm going to get grace from a Kadosh Baruch Hu so that nothing will happen to me. I'm learning Torah. I'm teaching Torah. And what's going to happen to me? Im Chayin Ma'ala Alam Deha. Now, if Torah can provide Chayin for the person who learns it, Agun La Migna, it's not going to protect me. Of course, the teaching of Torah is going to protect me. So Rav Yeshua Malevi felt that no problem. And yes, it's an exposure. And yes, it's a risk, but I'm going to be teaching Torah, and that'll provide a protection. A divine protection. Now, when he was about to die, so Amrle Lamalach Amaves Zil Avile Ruse. So Malach Amaves was told, "You see, Rav Yeshua ben Levi is about to die. Do whatever he wants." Azal is Chazilei, Salamach Mavid appears to Rav Yeshua ben Levi. Okay, now obviously we're going to go deep into the world of Agadita. I'm going to explain on the simplest level because that's the best thing I could do. It's limited. It's my limited ability to just explain the Gemara Kipshuto. And obviously there's depth. There's tremendous depth to the Gemara over here. I'm just going to read the words, translate the words, and whatever we can walk away from these Gemaras, we will. So Amrlei Echvelei Duchte. So Vishuma Levi says to the Malcham Avos, look, I would like to see my place in Gan Eden. So just show me where I'm gonna be parked. So Amrlei Lechaye. So the Malcham Avos says fine. So Amrlei Havli Sakinech. Dilma Mivasli Baorcha. So he says to the Malcham Avos, do me a favor, give me your knife, okay? Because we're gonna go on a journey and I might get scared or you might get scared. And I'm gonna be scared if you're holding on to your knife. So just give me your knife, I'll hold on to it. Yavini Ale, so the Malcham Avos gives it to him. Kimatalas, when they get there, Dalia, Kimachvale. So now they get to Gan Eden. Now, again, I'm just gonna provide the small imagery that I have in my mind. I may be totally off on this, but there's like a wall surrounding Gan Eden. And so what the Malcham Avos has to do is kind of like pick him up. That's what the words Dalia mean. Dalia kamachvele. So he picked him up so he could get a peek over the wall to see the Gan Eden. So Shavar Nafalo Gisa. So at that point in time, Rav Yeshua ben Levi jumped and he went to the other side. Nakte Bekarna de Glima. Malcham Avos now holding on to the corner of his coat. Amrle Bishwasa de Loasine. So he says, I made a shvua that I'm not going to take you there. Meaning, you can't go there without having to get through me first. In other words, the normal course of events is first you have to die, then you go to Gan Eden. What do you want to do? You're going to jump the fence and go to Gan Eden directly without having to die? You can't do that. So I'm a Kosh Baruch Hu, Yichal Shvasa Nehader. So Kosh Baruch Hu gets involved and he says, look, if he ever asked a she'ela on one of the shavuos that he made historically, we're talking about Rav Yeshua ben Levi, so then fine, so then take him back. But e lo lo nehadar. However, if Rav Yeshua ben Levi spent a lifetime never having to go back on a shavuot that he made, so then he gets to stay. So Amar le havli sakina. So okay, Malcham Avos concedes, and Malcham Avos now is going to allow Rav Yeshua ben Levi entrance into Gan Eden without having to die first. Fine. But the Malcham Avos says to Rav Yeshua ben Levi, can you do me one small favor? Can you give me back my knife? Right? That's, I'm a professional, and that's, of course, the tools of my craft. And could you give me back my knife? Lo havaka yayiv le, but he refused to give it to him. Navka bas kalav amra le, havni ale demit baila briyasa. So the Baskol comes down, the Baskol says to Rav Yeshua ben Levi, you got to give him back his knife. In other words, he's not going to use it for you, but there's other people out there. He needs it. Okay. Fine. So now we are, Rav Yeshua ben Levi now has literally jumped the fence and now is in Gan Eden and the Malcham Avos is now on his way and we move on to chapter 2 of the story. Machrez Eliyahu kamei panu Malcham labar Levi. So Eliyahu now makes a announcement, and that is to make way, make some room, because Bar Levi, that's a reference to Rav Yeshua ben Levi, is now coming into town. Padamakam la Bar Levi. He repeats it. Azal Ashkechel Rabbi Shimma Mayochai Davi Yasev Al Tlas Eser Tachtekei Pisa. Now he in Gan Eden, so he meets up with Rabbi Shimma Mayochai. And he is Rav Shimon Bar Yochai sitting on 13 shares of gold. Amale Atu Bar Levi, and Rav Shimon Bar Yochai says to Rav Shimon Ben Levi, are you Bar Levi? So Amale Ein. So he says, yep, that's me. Near Asa Keshes Biamecha. Have you ever seen a rainbow over the course of your years on earth? Amale Ein. So Rav Shimon Bar Levi says, yep, I did. I saw a rainbow. Imkein Iata Bar Levi. So Rav Shimon Bar Yochai says, well, if that's true, then you can't be Rav Shimon Bar Levi. Okay, and the reason why it was so incriminating to have seen a keshet, a rainbow, as we all know, is that Kadosh Baruch Hu, every time he gets angry, again, to the best of our understanding, every time he gets angry, so he wants to destroy the world, but then he remembers that he made a promise that he wasn't going to destroy the world, hence keshet, hence the rainbow. So the fact that there was a rainbow is an indication that Kadosh Baruch Hu was angry. So Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is saying, if you really were Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Kadosh Baruch Hu never would have gotten angry. Meaning, through your zichuyos, there should never have been a cause for Kadosh Baruch Hu to want to destroy the world. So below, now the Gemara points out that it's not factually true. meaning there really was no rainbow during the time of Rav Yehoshua Malevi. The lohava midi ella savar lo ichzik tivasal nafshe. You know what that was, says the Gemara? That was Rav Yehoshua Malevi being humble. That's all. In other words, really, there was no rainbow, but out of his humility, so his answer was, yeah, there was a rainbow. But it really wasn't true. Okay? Needless to say, it really goes without saying. It's Divrei Agadata, right? Obviously, the Gemara is telling us these stories to communicate messages to us. On the simplest level, it's fair to say that Rav Yehoshua Ben Levi was a special human being, and part of his unique and special qualities was that, despite the fact that he was subjecting himself to risk, to teaching Torah, to the people who were sick, ill, really outcast of society, and he also put himself at risk by teaching them Torah, but obviously he was awarded a special place in Gan Eden, even though because he made those kinds of risks. That's the simplest idea that the Gemara is kind of trying to communicate to us, and then obviously you can go much deeper. We're going to go on the Gemara, just going to finish up. Rabbi Chanina bar Papa, Shushpaneh Havai. So now the Gemara turns its attention to Rabbi Chanina bar Papa. So he was a good friend of the Malacham Avos. Okay, now, I know you got to pick your friends carefully. In other words, it is a strange friendship, but the Gemara says it, so. Shushbanai Havai, ki hava kanicha navshei, amlele malcham avazil avalei reyusa. So, once again, when it came time for Rabbi Chanina bar Papa to die, so the Malcham Avos was told, "You do whatever he wants." Azal gabe v'schazalei. So the Malcham Avos appears to Rabbi Chanina bar Papa. Amar le shavke tilsin yom ada nahadu tamadai. So Rabbi Chanina bar Papa says, "Look, do me a favor. Give me a 30-day extension. Meaning, I know it's time for me to go, and I know you're going to take me, but just give me an additional 30 days. I want to chazer all my learning." We know Damri Ashrei Misha Balakan Talmud Biyado. Gemara says we've seen it already a couple times since the beginning of Shas. The fortunate is somebody who comes up to Gan Eden and he has his learning with him. So I just want a time to review. The big test coming up. So give me some 30 days to review. Shavke Labasa Talsniyom and Azal is Chazale. Okay, he granted him his wish. 30 days. He went over his Gemara, and now Malcham Avos appears to him again. Amalei Achvile Duchte. So once again, conversation goes like this. Could you show me where I am in Gan Eden? Amalei Lachaisei says good. Amalei Havli Sakina Achdom Mivasele Borche. So he says, look, do me a favor. Let me hold on to your knife. Okay, so he's about to do the same move that Rav Yehoshua ben Levi did. So Armalei kechavrcha bad lamevili. So Malcham Avos says, look, you want to do to me like your friend did to me? Meaning, I fell for it once. But okay, fine, I fell for it. But to fall for it again, that's ridiculous. I'm not going to fall for it again. Amalei, I see sefer v'chazi, mika midi dichsiv be'edlo kiamte. So he says, okay, bring me a sefer Torah, and let's see if I was mekayim the entire Torah. Amalei, miachrecha bebalei ra'asam v'yasa b'ktorah. He says, let me ask you a simple question. Did you teach Torah to Balei Ra'asan? Meaning, you think you were so compliant with the Torah. Interesting. You know, we had Rav Yehoshua ben Levi. Now he went and he taught Torah to Balei Ra'asan, to those people who were really sick and really infirmed and really contagious. And did you do that? Now the Gemara admits that Rabbi Chanina bar Papa was not at the same level as Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, but still, the Gemara says that he was so special and so unique that when he died, so a column of fire separated his body from the rest of the people. Now, we've seen this expression before, this idea that some people are so special that even after they die, the people surviving on this earth can't get to him because of this column of fire. Ugemiri. And the Gemara says, and we have a tradition. This happens once or twice in a generation, but that's it. Karvla gabe Rabbi Alexandria, and Rabbi Alexandria tries to get close to the body, meaning they want to bury the body. It's very interesting. On one hand, there's a mitzvah to bury the body. On the other hand, because this person was so holy and they had so much kedusha, they just simply can't get to the body. So Rabbi Alexandria now is pleading. Amar aseh bishvil kvod chachamim. Like, look, there's a lot of chachamim around right now. Tanu the Chachamim, he's asking that he get access to the body. Lo Ashkach, that didn't work. Ask the Bishvok Kvod Avicha, can you do it for the honor of your father? Lo Ashkach, that also didn't work. Ask the Bishvok Kvod Atzmecha, how about for your own covered? Meaning, it's a lack of covered that your body just be here, not being buried. So Istalik. So, okay, so the fire left and now he got that access. Amar Abai Lafuki Maman Delo Kayem, Afilo Osachas. And this excludes somebody who was not mekayim even one letter. So in other words, in order to get this pillar, you have to be mekayim the entire Torah, like we saw by Rabbi Chanina bar Papa. Amalei Rav Ada bar Maslav. I'm sorry. Amalei Ravacha Rav Ada bar Maslav. Fuki miman mimar delo isle ma'akal igra. So the it excludes somebody who didn't make a fence around his roof. We know there's a mitzvah in the Torah that when you have a roof, not our roofs, which are sloped and slanted, and no one's walking on our roofs, but in the good old days, they had a roof, and the roof was flat, and there's a mitzvah in the Torah that you got to put a fence around your roof. And by the way, there's also a mitzvah of when you have pits or pools, so you got to put a fence around that as well. So, question of whether that's min Torah or min Rabbanan, but anyway. So, velohi. But the Gemara points out, but that's not true. Me'ava have. So, truth of the matter is that he did put a fence up around his roof. But there was a wind that blew it down. Okay, but the truth of the matter is he had it. Rabbi Chanina now is going to explain the following phenomena. You know, here in Bavel, we don't have this. We don't have people suffering from Balei Rasan. Not like they had in Eretz Yisrael, not like by Rabbi Yeshua Malevi, who was obviously a resident of Eretz Yisrael. We don't have it. Why don't we have it? Because of our diet, right? Beets and beer. And special beer made with special hops, whatever the case is. In other words, our diets preclude us from suffering from this illness. I'm Rav Yochanan Ein Mitzrayim BeBavel. Rav Yochanan now is going to explain why aren't there people suffering from tzaras in Bavel. So the Gemara gives a medical explanation in terms of why there's no tzaras. Again, it has to do with diet, and it has to do with the fact that the Euphrates River, they're bathing in the Euphrates River, and that also prevents tzaras as well. Obviously, the Gemara here is a little bit challenging to understand. Generally speaking, we know that tzaras is a disease, but spiritually based, meaning it has to do with your conduct and your behavior, and it's not diet and hygienics that are going to affect tzaras, but you need to give a somewhat more richer explanation in terms of tzaras, meaning maybe it's a compound causes to it, and it's not just the spiritual causes. Maybe Hadron Lachamadras Ishto, that is the end of the seventh parak. Okay. We now begin the eighth parak of the Masechta. We are well into the Masechta. The Masechta has a totality of 13 prakim. And by being now in parak 8, so we are certainly in the later portions of the parak, and we are going to stay on topic of marriage. Obviously, that's the entire Masechta. And specifically, we're going to talk about the topic of Nechsei Malug. Okay, topic that we've touched on before, but here the Mishnah is going to spell it out outright. And just allow me please to give just a couple of words of introduction. Okay, women can have property, they can own property. There's nothing that precludes a woman from owning a property. But we're now going to be discussing a woman owning property while also being married as well. Okay, before she's married, a woman who owns property, so she can do whatever she wants. She can buy, she could sell. In other words, she has all rights and regulations of land ownership. However, once she gets married, the following occurs. As a married woman, her husband has usage of the property, what we call throughout Shas, peros. And that usage of the property means now that the husband does not become the owner of the property. Let me repeat that again, because that's very important. The husband does not become the owner of the property, but he's given rights of usage. And this is what's called Nechsei Malug. The word Malug actually comes from the word Maliga. Maliga means to pluck. So in other words, as a married woman with property, she will go into the marriage with her property. That property is still hers. The title of that property, the deed of the property says her name, and it's still under her name. It's just that now the husband has usage and rights to that property. All fruit that grow on that property belongs to the husband. The peros belong to the property, to the husband. He receives the dividends, but the property still belongs to her. Now there is,
can she sell it?
No, that's going to be our topic of discussion today. Now there is another way, another method of what she could do with her property, and that's Nechsei Tzon Barzal. I'll explain it briefly, but just to know, we're not going to be talking about Nechsei Tzon Barzal today. We're only going to be talking about Nechsei Malug. Nechsei Tzon Barzal is the following. When she goes into a marriage, she could say to her husband the following: look, here's my property, you take it. You take my property, it becomes yours, but she doesn't just give it to her husband, but here's the story. What you're going to do, what we're going to do is we're going to go to an appraiser, we're going to assess the current value of the property, we're going to put that current value into the ksuva, so that in the event, if in the event that you die before me, so now the estate is going to owe me the value of that property. So the property itself, you do with it what you want. It's yours. Appreciation, depreciation, whatever happens to it, it's yours. And you'll benefit from its improved value, and you'll suffer if it goes down. But the original value, that is contracted into the ksuva, written into the ksuva, and you're going to be, upon death, your estate is, or divorce, you're going to be giving me not only the base value of the ksuva, but also the value of the property as well. That's Nechsei Tzon Barzal. And that's not our discussion now. Our discussion today is going to be strictly about Nechsei Malug. So Nechsei Malug is not written into the ksuva. It's hers. It's fundamentally hers. And so the topic of discussion we're going to be having over the course of this morning, in the first daf of the eighth parak, daf Ayin Ches, is going to be a very simple question. Can she sell it? If it's hers, can she sell it? That's it. That's our whole discussion.
Is Nechsei Malug anything that's not
No, the default is that it's Nechsei Malug, and the only time it becomes Nechsei Tzon Barzal is if at the marriage day she makes a statement and she says, I want this to go into the ksuva.
So anything that's not designated as Nechsei Tzon Barzal is Nechsei Malug automatically.
Right, right, because it's hers. It's hers, and marriage doesn't change the fact that it's hers. But what does change, however, is that he now has usage. Now, once again, before we start with the Mishnah, let's again go over something that we learned earlier in the Masechta. And that is, why does the husband get usages of the of her lands? So that is reciprocity. Like we've learned earlier in the Masechta, it takes us all the way back to Daf Mem Zayin. So we learned earlier that the Chachamim instituted in a marriage that there would be a healthy exchange between husband and wife. And so certain things get exchanged, and he's going to get peros, and in exchange for peros, what does she get? Remember? Pirkona. She gets to be ransomed. She gets to be redeemed. In the event that she's taken into captivity, so she, what the husband now is required to do is to pay her ransom. That is, and it's very easy to remember, the pay. Peros tachas pirkona. So he gets the peros, and she's going to get that ability to be ransomed and redeemed. The Gemara earlier talked about how fair an exchange it is. Look, in any exchange, you know, there's always going to be a question of equity and fairness. And you know, I tell my children, and I life isn't fair, meaning it's not a perfect exchange, but nevertheless, it doesn't matter. The Chachamim said that in exchange for that, that's exchange for her being ransomed and redeemed by the husband. So he's going to be enjoying her peros. Okay, and you go back to the Gemara's back on Daf Mem Zayin, and the Gemara over there explains why that was the match. But that's a match. Okay.
What happens if she gets an inheritance during the marriage?
Okay, good. That's, you're asking the right question, and we're going to be addressing that in the Mishnah. Okay, the Mishnah is going to go through four different scenarios, and in every one of the four scenarios, we're basically going to be addressing one issue in all four scenarios. Can she sell this property? Okay, number one. Let's say she gets a property before Erisin. Now, Beisham and Beisel are in perfect agreement that she can sell the land, she can gift the land, Vikayam, and it's valid. So, she gets a property before Erisin. Now, Rashi writes over here, it's an important Rashi. Rashi says, and in case number one, we're only discussing her ability to sell the land up to Nisuin, but not after Nisuin. You see the second Rashi, you can see it actually in the first Rashi on the Mishnah. Rashi writes, Aisha Achelot Tisarets, before Erisin, Vinis Arsa. Rashi says, and she went through Erisin. Beisham Me'orim Tim Kors, look at the second Rashi, Ba'od Arusa. when can she sell this property during Erusin? Ava mishitina say lo. But once she goes through Nisuin, the second stage of marriage, then she can't sell the property. Okay. So, in case number one, she gets the property before Erusin. So that means then that she acquired the property. Now, I know the Mishnah says inherited, but I think we all understand. We're not limiting ourselves to a case of inheritance. We're just, in other words, that's just the easiest way to put land in her property. Okay, so in her possession. So she gets land before Erusin. She could sell it. She could gift it. It's hers, and there's no restriction, and that continues even into Erusin. Now, why should that be? Because we learned earlier that although there is an exchange of Paris Perkana, those financial obligations do not begin until Nisuin. Meaning at the point of Erusin, they're married. But married meaning husband and wife, Isser. But in terms of all the monetary laws that kick in, they do not kick in until the point of Nisuin. Fine. So in case number one, when she gets the land before Erusin, and then she could, before Erusin, obviously, it goes without saying, she could sell it. But even after Erusin, before Nisuin, she could also sell the land as well. There's agreement between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Case number two. Case number two in the Mishnah, Nafla Mishnah Sarsa. Let's say she gets the property, she inherits the property after Erusin. Now what? Beis Shammai Omrim Timkor, Beis Hillel Omrim Lo Timkor. So here we have a machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel on whether or not she could sell lechatchila. Beis Shammai takes the position that she can sell it, and Beis Hillel says lo timkor. She is not permitted to sell it lechatchila. Elav elamodim. However, they both agree she machvenasna kayim that if post facto b'di'eved she sold the land, so kayim. It's the sale is a valid sale. Okay, that is case number two. Now it does come out, by the way, if you think about this Mishnah, you think about the Machlokes Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, comes out now the Beis Hillel is being Machmir. It's unusual that Beis Hillel is being Machmir. But again, remember, we've said, we made this point already a couple of times, and Tosfos over here makes it as well. And that is that in any type of monetary law, using the words Kula and Chumra are not really applicable. Because, right, in monetary law, a Kula for one person is a Chumra for the other. Right, usually there are two people involved, and so you're going to be machmir for her, but that of course means that you're going to be makel for the husband. So, to using the words kul and chumar are not really applicable. But sure. From her perspective, Beis Hillel is being machmir. Yes.
So how does Hillel answer the idea that he's not obligated at Erusin?
Okay, good. So stay tuned. So Amar Rabbi Yehuda. So now over here we're going to have an exchange. Now we're going to have two versions of this exchange. We have Rabbi Yehuda's version of the exchange, and later on we're going to have Rabbi Hananya ben Akavya. Okay, so Rabbi Hanina ben Akavya. But in the meantime, right now we're going over the first version of the exchange, and this is Rabbi Yehuda's version. And the exchange is between Rabbi Gamliel and the Chachamim. Amru Chachamim lefnei Rabbi Gamliel. The Chachamim turn to Rabbi Gamliel and they say to him, I'm not following. Meaning, they went through Erusin. Erusin means that they're husband and wife. So, doesn't he also, he's zocha with a wife? Shouldn't he also be zocha with the property as well? Meaning, now, explain, this could be going on either the lechatchila halacha, or it could be going on the b'di'evad. Now the Gemara is going to ask that question, but I'm going to explain the Mishnah as the Gemara will conclude. That's really going on the b'di'evad. What did we learn? That b'di'evad, if she sells the property during Erusin, that's fine. So the sale is a valid sale. And what the rabbi said to Rabbi Gamliel is, well, why should that be? Meaning, when he married her, so he acquires a wife. Shouldn't he acquire the property as well? Amar lahem. Rabbi Gamliel says back to the Chachamim, Alachadoshim Anuboshim. We're embarrassed about the property that's new. I'll explain what that means in just a moment. Elasha Tema Gagan Alenu Asayishanim. And now you want to add on the old properties as well? Okay. Rabbi Gamliel basically his answer is like this. Look. Let's think about the basic halacha, which we're going to learn in just a moment. And that is if she gets property after marriage, meaning after Nisuin. We're all going to agree that she can't sell that property. Rabbi Gamliel says, you see that halacha over there? We're embarrassed by that halacha. Now, I know that's not, generally speaking, a way to speak about a particular halacha, but in other words, what Rabbi Gamliel is really saying is, I know the Chachamim legislated that she can't sell the property. But if you think about it, it's a hard halacha to understand. It's her property. No one's arguing whether whose property it is. It's hers. She's married and he has usage rights to it. That should preclude her from having to sell it? Just because he has usage rights over it? Okay, he gets the dividends. You know what? If she sells the property, that's it. He won't get the dividends anymore. What is that halacha? Okay, so you know what it is? It's a halacha. Meaning...
But he's providing. He's keep providing.
Okay, good. When all said and done, it's a halacha. But Rabbi Gamliel says, look, as far as I'm concerned, even there, anuboshim, meaning, okay, fine, it's a halacha. I don't fully understand it, but fine, it's a halacha. Now you want to tell me that land that she's selling while during Erusin, right, during Erusin, like that for sure she should be able to sell. And there, the financial obligations don't even kick in yet. So, you want to add on more to this halacha when even the basic halacha itself, like we struggle with. We have a hard time understanding the basic halacha itself. So, don't add any more. Okay, that was the exchange of the Chacham and Rabbi Gamliel, at least according to Rabbi Yehuda. That's the first version of that exchange we're going to see. Okay, case number three.
Rabbi Gamliel goes against
Hillel? No, Rabbi Gamliel is not going against Hillel. Rabbi Gamliel is explaining what the halacha. Meaning, the halacha is that if she sells property that she inherited during Erusin, so lechatchila she shouldn't sell it. But b'di'evad, the sale's a valid sale. And to that, they ask Rabbi Gamliel, well, why should that be? She's married. And Rabbi Gamliel says, look, don't start with me. Rabbi Gamliel basically says, I know she can't sell property that she acquired after Nisuin. I'm not going to argue with that. I just don't fully understand it. But fine, she can't. And now you want to tell me about property during Erusin? Come on. He's not arguing. He's simply explaining. Case number three. Naflu la mishani says, let's say she inherits property after Nisuin. So there's perfect agreement between Meshama and Beisela that she has absolutely no right to sell the land. And in fact, not only does she have no right, but if in fact she sells the land, so the husband can go to the buyer of that property, and he could just simply say, I'll take that back, thank you very much. The sale is voided. Now, there is obviously a further discussion about reimbursement. I mean, in other words, he did pay for the land, so is he going to be receiving a reimbursement? That's not only a legitimate question, but it's worth delving into. We're just going to stay right now with the basic halacha. The sale is not a valid sale. Number four, Achelonises Vinises. Let's say she gets the land before Nisuin. And it doesn't matter when, it says Rashi. It could be before the Erusin, it could be the after Erusin. Doesn't matter. And now what happens is she goes for marriage. Okay. Rabbi Gamliel Omer, Imachra V'nasna Kayim. Rabbi Gamliel says here, okay, if she sells the land, Kayim. The sale is a valid sale. Because she acquired the land before Nisuin. Ami Rabbi Chanina ben Akavia. Rabbi Chanina ben Akavia says, on this point, we have an exchange. The exchange over here is going to sound identical to the exchange we saw earlier. But according to Rabbi Chanina ben Akavia, this is really where the exchange belongs. On this fourth halacha. I don't understand. They're married. And when we say they're married, we now mean fully married. Nisuin. And meanwhile, shouldn't the husband be totally within his right to prevent the sale of a land that she owns? Meaning he has the usage, and over here, again, it's Nisuin. He has the usage. So shouldn't be able to prevent her from selling the land? Amar Lahem, and Rabbi Gamliel's response is, we know the response. Al Chadash Manu Boshim. Look, I'm telling you, even if she acquired land for the first time after she's married, right? That's the chadashim. Anu boshim, we're embarrassed by that. Meaning the idea that she can't sell the land, like, okay. Meaning, it's the halacha. We know it's the halacha. But I don't fully understand it. It's her land. Why can't you sell it? Okay, she can't sell it. But even there, like, begrudgingly, I know she can't sell it. But now you're talking about land that she got before Nisuin. She can't sell that land? I can't imagine. Okay. Rabbi Shimon Cholek ben Nechasim Nechasim. Rabbi Shimon is going to create a distinction between different types of properties. Nechasim, how you doing? Alaba lo timkor. If it's land that the husband knew about, so then that she can't sell. And if she sells that land, that sale is going to be avoided. She'ena you doing Labaal, however, if it's not known to the husband, lo simkor. So in other words, she has some sort of Swiss account. She has some accounts in the islands. So I'm joking. We're gonna the Gemara later on is gonna talk about what actually this difference is. Lands that he knew about, lands properties he knew about, properties he didn't know about. However, but if it's lands that he did not, if it's lands that he did not know about, so then the sale would be a valid sale. And when we get to the Gemara later on, we're gonna explain what exactly Rabbi Shimon's talking about. Okay, but we start with the Gemara. Maishna Risha Delo Pligi, Maishna Sefer Depligi. What's the difference between case number one and case number two? Let's review. Case number one in the Mishnah is where she gets property before Erisin and she wants to sell it now during Erisin. What did we learn in the Mishnah? Good. She can go for it. She has every right to do that. Case number two in the Mishnah is that she gets the property before after Erisin, and now she wants to sell it during Erisin. So here we have a machlokus between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Beis Shammai says that she can sell it, and Beis Hillel says lechatchila she cannot. And then b'di'eved, we all agree b'di'eved that the sale would be a valid sale before Nisuin. What's the difference between case one and case two? Maishna Resha de la Pligi, Maishna Sefer de Pligi. And in case one, we all agree that she could sell it. Even because she got it before Erisin. And she could sell it during Erisin. In case number two, she got it during Erisin. Beis Hillel says that she can't sell it lechatchila during Erisin. Amar de Beis Raviana, Resha bezuchusa naflu, Sefer bezuchuso naflu. So the first attempt of the Gemara to explain the difference is, well, look. Look at when she acquired the land. In case number one, she acquired it when she was single. That's bizichusa. Meaning, she right now speaks on behalf of nobody else. It's her. And therefore, she can sell it. However, in case number two, when did she acquire the property? After Erisin. So the husband has a little zichus over her. So the Gemara says, now, what does that mean? What does that mean, what I just said? A little zichus. Gemara says, "Im bezichuso naflu ki machra v'nasna amai kayim." If the husband really has rights over her after Erisin, so let me ask you a simple question: b'di'evin, we all agree the sale should be good. Sorry, b'di'evin, the sale is good. Why? If he really has his chus over her after Erisin, so shouldn't the sale be void? And meanwhile, that's not the halacha. So amai kayim. So the Gemara says, I'm not buying this explanation of Zechusa versus Zechuso. That's not a good explanation of the Mishnah. Ella, Reisha Vadei B'Zechusa Naflu, Seifa Eimer B'Zechusa, Eimer B'Zechuso. So the Gemara says like this. If she gets property before Erisin, so clearly at that point in time, she's a perfect independent. She's under nobody's jurisdiction. And so therefore, she could sell that property. She could sell the property now as a single woman, and she could sell the property even after Erisin as well. Fine. However, if she acquires land after Erisin, but before Nisuin, so now we're in the world of Safek. Now, this is interesting. What does that mean, Safek? Well, the Gemara says, it's Safek b'zuchuso, Safek b'zuchusa. So, let me just finish reading the Gemara, and then I'll go back to explain what suffix we're talking about. So So that means that according to Beis Hillel, because it's a suffix, so lichatchila she shouldn't sell it, but b'di'evin she sold it, so then fine, the sale is a valid sale. What are we talking about when we say that it's a suffix? What is the suffix? So take a look at Rashi, and Rashi explains like this. Rashi says, Amar b'zichuso. Erisin osei suffik nisuin. Fascinating Rashi. Rashi says, you know what happens to a woman when she goes through Erisin? There's a chance that she's going to go through stage two. Now, the chance happens to be pretty good. Meaning, generally speaking, after Erisin, the next step of marriage is Nicole Nisuin. However, Shema Tavo Lidei Nisuin, Shema Lo Tavo. Maybe they'll be married, maybe they won't be married. Now, what's the maybe over here?
Like, there's a whole year there,
and if you remember, we learned earlier in the previous prakim, there may be things that are discovered after the point of erusin, which will undo the erusin. So the truth of the matter is that even though they went through erusin, and again, that means they're husband and wife, but still there is a potential, a possibility that the marriage will not arrive at its culmination. Therefore, if she gets the land of erusin, now because there is a good chance that her destiny is that she's going to be married, so therefore she should not sell the land. But at the same time, we don't know 100% that that's her destiny. I'm not going to attach a number. I don't know what the exact percentage is, but there's a chance that she won't get to the point of nisuin. So because of that, she sells a property she shouldn't, but b'diavad the sale is a valid sale. That, the Gemara says, is the difference between case number one and case number two. Now, Now we're going to go over that exchange between Rabbi Gamliel and the Chachamim. And we're going to go over the first version, meaning Rabbi Yehuda's version. Now, the Chachamim say to Rabbi Gamliel, I don't understand, she gets the property after erusin, she shouldn't sell it. It belongs to the husband. And it doesn't belong to the husband. The husband, shouldn't he have rights over it? Shouldn't that prevent the sale? Now, Ibailu, the Gemara asks a very simple question. Rav Yehuda alachatzil adiavid. When the Chachamim were challenging Rami Gamliel, were they challenging him on the halacha of lechatzila? Meaning, remember, lechatzila, we have a machlok between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel says she shouldn't sell. Beis Shammai says, no, even lechatzila she can. Oh, adiavid. Or is the challenge going on the halacha b'diavad? What's the halacha b'diavad? We all agree, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel all agree that the sale is a valid sale. Tashma, the Gemara says, okay, well, let's take a look at a Braisa. Detanya, the Braisa says, I'm Rav Yehuda, I'm Rav Nehra Ben Gamliel, Hol Vizuishto. Look, Nisuin, marriage. Erusin, marriage. Meaning they're both marriage. So, Zumach Rabatel, Av Zumach Rabatel. In the case of Nisuin, what do we know? That if she sells a property after Nisuin, marriage, sale's no good. So, shouldn't the same thing be true after erusin as well? Zu avzu machrabata. Amar lahem, and here's the, again, for the third time today, we get to hear the response from Gamliel. Ala chadashim anaboshim ala shatem agalgan lainos yishanim. Look, we're embarrassed over the basic halacha. That if she acquires the land after nisuin, she can't sell it. Okay, that, again, begrudgingly, that's the halacha. And now you want to add more? You want to tell me that she can't sell land during erusin, even if she acquired it during erusin? Like, I can't imagine. So essentially, what did you see from Rabbi Gamliel's response? That b'diavad, if she sold the land during erusin, that she acquired during erusin, the sale's a good sale. Shmamina, d'yavad kamar shmamina. So you see that the exchange between Rabbi Gamliel and the Chachamim was going on the case of b'diavad. Okay, Tanya. Here is a braisa. I'm a Rabbi Chanina ben Akavya. So Rabbi Chanina ben Akavya, now remember in our Mishnah we saw that he gave a different version of the exchange between Rabbi Gamliel and the Chachamim, and in this braisa we get to see the entirety of the exchange according to Rabbi Chanina ben Akavya. So lo kach yeshivun Rabbi Gamliel Chachamim, lo kach yeshivun. That's not how the exchange went, but rather, this is how the exchange went. Lo im amarta ben nesua shekein ba'ala zaka ben mitziyasa v'masi hadeh uva hafaris nedareha. Look, if she acquires land after nesuin, she can't sell it. But, of course she can't sell it, because think of what the husband has. He gets her mitziyah. He gets anything she finds goes to the husband. Masi hadeh, her earnings go to the husband. Hafaris nedareha, the husband has the right to annul the vow, her vows. In other words, you see from these halachas that the husband has jurisdiction over her and financial jurisdiction over her. Tomru ba'arusa, shein bala zakai, lo b'mitziyasa, v'lo b'masi adav, v'lo b'afaras nedareha. However, if you're talking about during erusin, a husband has no financial jurisdiction over her during erusin. He doesn't get her earnings. He doesn't get her findings. He does not have the right to annul her vows. So, Amru lo Rebbe, machra achelo nises. Nises v'achakach machra mahu. So, if she sells it before nisuin, if she gets married and then she sells, what would be the halacha? Amalahu, avzu mecharas menasen sekayim. Rabbi Gamliel says, sale's valid. Because again, we're talking about properties that were acquired before Nisuin. So, to which they say to Rabbi Gamliel, wait a second. They went through marriage. And again, marriage over here meaning stage two of marriage. Fourth time today, we get to hear the response of Rabbi Gamliel, the final response of Rabbi Gamliel. Look, over the most recent properties, meaning properties that she gets after Nisuin, admittedly she can't sell. But Anu Boshim. But we're embarrassed by that. Properties that she had before Nisuin, come on. She could sell those properties. Okay. Good. That is the Braisa. And according to this Braisa, it comes out now that in this version of the exchange, Rabbi Gamliel tells the Chachamim, any land she has before they get married, and before they get married means, even before Nisuin, she can sell those properties. The only properties that she is prohibited from selling, and the sale is going to be voided, are only properties that she gets for the first time after Nisuin. Fine. There is a subtle difference between the Braisa we just read and our Mishnah. According to our Mishnah, Rabbi, we have basically the same accounting, but in our Mishnah, we learned that according to Rabbi Chanina ben Akavia's version of Rabbi Gamliel, she can sell these properties, again, these properties meaning properties she gets before Nisuin, but only b'dieved. According to the Braisa we just learned, she can even sell those properties lechatchila. And that bothers the Gemara. Vanantanan. Achelonisas Venisas Remingamla Omer im Machra Venasnakayim. If you read our Mishnah sounds like it's Bidiyevit. Amrazvit Tanim Mocheres Venosenes Vikayim. So Rav Zvit says, okay, take out a pen, and or when you teach the Mishnah, the way to correctly teach the Mishnah is, no, even Lechatchila, she can sell those properties. Rav Papa Amar Lokasha, Ha Rabbi Yehuda Libad Remingamliol, Ha Rabbi Chanina Ben Akavia Alibad Remingamliol. So the Gemara says, well, look, maybe it's two different versions of what Rabbi Gamliel says. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Chanin ben Akavia kebe Shammai. So what does that mean now? That according to Rabbi Chanin ben Akavia, you're having Rabbi Gamliel go like Beit Shammai? Hachi kamar. The Gemara says, no, and of course I'm not saying that. Lo nechluga Beit Shammai beisil al davar zeh. What I am, however, saying is that there was never a machlokus. This was always a point of agreement. Okay. And finally now we get to that was a lot of information, admittedly. And it's complicated by the fact that you gotta keep in mind two things. When she acquired the property, and B, when she wants to sell the property. Okay. Now, in terms of the basic halacha, let's just finish up today with the following. Rav Shmuel Darmer Tavai, Ben Shanafalu Anachasim, Ashalon Esarsa, Ben Shanafalu Anachasim, Ashalon Esarsa, Veniseis, Habal Motzi Miyad Alukuchos. Here's the halacha. The halacha is, we're going to go with answer D, and that is none of the above. Meaning that she acquires property before Erisin, after Erisin. Once she goes through Nisuin, she can no longer sell that property. Even though it's hers, even though the title of that property is hers, but because of the husband's produce that he benefits, the payros, that he has rights for usage of the property, so therefore she cannot sell the property and the sale would be void. Now the Gemara says, now wait 1 second, come on, the Loka Rabbi Yehuda, the Loka Rabbi Chanina, Ben Akavia. You know, that accords with nobody, because according to Rabbi Yehuda, b'dieved the sale is good. According to Rabbi Chanina ben Akavia, even lechatchila she could sell these properties. Again, properties that she acquired before Nisuin. So, ino d'amri k'rabbeinu. So the Gemara says, actually, there is a third option which we have not seen yet, and now we see it. D'tanya, rabbeinu chazru v'nimnu. There was a revote, based in, convened once again. And bein shenafala achalo tisaris, bein shenafala mishenesarsa. Whether the property came to her before Erisin, after Erisin, v'niseis, and she goes through the second stage of marriage, haba motzi miyad al kuchos. It prevents her right to sell the property. Should the sale of the property will be voided. So, after having gone through the Mishnah and most of today's daf, the Gemara's conclusion is, interesting conclusion, that Rabbi Shmuel both say that once she goes to Nisuin, all properties that she owns, she still owns them, and the husband only has a usage over it, rights of usage, and the dividends off that property, but the Chachamim prevented her ability to sell that property. Well, tomorrow, just one second, tomorrow we'll continue. There's more on this topic, I mean, obviously, but tomorrow we're going to explain a little bit better in terms of when can she sell the title of that property. That's a topic we'll cover first thing tomorrow.